It's not going to be super long, so I know there's lots of things to do. But Zach and Nolan asked me if I'd be willing to share my testimony. Sorry. Thanks. Share my testimony with you this afternoon. So my name is Keith, in case you don't know me or we've never met. My wife Stacy and I, we fellowship with the believers here at SBF, and we've only been here in Sudbury just over a year. We moved up here from southwestern Ontario 2 weeks after our wedding. I had a chance to share my testimony here a few months ago, and it was a great opportunity to introduce myself to my new church family. There's a few things I mentioned there then that I won't today, but there's a few things that I want to touch on from my past that I only alluded to then because I think they're relevant in this context. And just based on what I heard from Sean and sitting in on Matt's elective, I think if I know the working of the Holy Spirit in any way, shape, or form, I'm just hoping there's a reason for this testimony, and I pray that some of my experiences or my background resonates and that it helps or encourages you in some way. I'm pretty much an old man compared to most of you, so don't hold that against me. I mentioned that I'm married as of last September, in fact. I feel obligated to let you know that I'm related to Jay Ball because Stacy is his sister. I figured that might get me some sympathy points from anyone here who knows Jay. But it's probably a testimony to the fact that we're both getting old if you don't know him, as his celebrity status diminishes in youth circles. I like to mention before I give my testimony, just a little bit of defining your terms, that a testimony can be several things. I'll give you a testimony of how God saved my soul and how I even started on this journey as a born-again Christian. That's what we generally understand when we use the word testimony in church meetings. But after I was saved and up until this point here, quite a lot has happened in my life. I can give a testimony of how the Lord taught me and nurtured my spiritual growth by bringing me into fellowship with a lovely group of believers down in Tavistock. Props to my Tavitowners in the audience. I also have a testimony of how the Lord drew me back from several years of just floundering in apathy. There's a lot that I'm not proud of wrapped up in that time period, but I learned a lot about the grace of God through it. I have a testimony of how the Lord helped me cope with a workplace injury to my back, and how through retraining I find myself working in a field that I love, despite some of the limitations that still plague me. I have a testimony of the Lord's grace in bringing Stacy and I together after thinking that maybe marriage wasn't going to happen for me. It shows that the Lord's timing is perfect. When you get married, a lot of your testimony becomes collective, and so Stacy and I together have a testimony of how the Lord led us to live here in Sudbury. The point of a testimony is to give God the glory. I didn't bring anything to the table in any of these situations. In fact, the opposite is true. I had great need with no ability to change my circumstances, especially when it came to salvation. In all of these situations, I found myself utterly dependent and having no idea where to turn or what was best. I don't find myself in this position of blessing because I was the smartest or the bravest or I was really great at making good decisions. My story is about God's grace. I don't formally publicly speak too much. I don't consider myself a great speaker. I don't wing it very well. I'm pretty deliberate and calculating and a bit OCD, and so I don't do too much off-the-cuff speaking. Maybe that'll get better in time, but for now I think I'm a better writer, and so I have these words set out in front of me. So let's get into it. Being saved or born again is truly a battle for your eternal soul. So here's how mine went down. I'm 44 years old. I was born in 1971 to Tom and Audrey Morrell in Cambridge, Ontario. I have a sister that is 3 years older than me. Her name is Roberta, and she lives in Cambridge, and a brother who's a year younger named Jason, and he lives in Pembroke. When I look back at my childhood from quite a number of years later, it wasn't a great one by most measures. I never knew my father. He was gone by the time I was three. He fled to British Columbia to avoid some legal obligations to us. He wasn't a good man in any way. He was a drunkard, and he physically abused my mom so that she had to flee that situation with us three small kids. We grew up in the government welfare system, mother's allowance, subsidized housing, Living below the poverty line comes with a number of perils, and my mom never really got over the tragic beginnings of our family. But I think she did the best she could. We didn't really lack for anything growing up. Young kids don't notice those kinds of things. We were clothed and fed and had a mother who loved us. You notice the differences as you get older, especially high school. Unfortunately, my mom was broken, and she started abusing alcohol for quite a number of years, before we were even teenagers. And that complicated things quite a bit, and our family barely survived. It turned out that I was the only one to complete high school. My sister ran away and entered foster care when she was like 14 or 15 and never finished, although she did get her GED later in life. My brother dropped out in grade 10 and went to work in a nearby auto wrecking yard. And I became pretty introverted during those years and found solace in books and just kept my head down. But I wasn't very happy with the whole situation. I actually found school pretty easy. I was a bit of a class clown. I was coasting through school at general level courses, not really studying, but doing fine. I was a bit aimless. I had no idea what to do with my life after school. I applied to a couple colleges, but got waitlisted. So I went back to school for some extra credits and a co-op course that placed me as a production scheduler at a small company in Cambridge. One thing I can attest to is that God makes appointments. He knew exactly where I needed to be and when, and so shortly after I started at this company, I met a young lady named Joanne. Joanne was placed there through a temp agency, and she became the production clerk in my department. She had just married her husband Andrew 4 weeks earlier, and she was also a fairly new believer. Now, to give you a bit of a religious background, I grew up in the Catholic religion. I attended Catholic school all throughout my education. As far as I know, I'm now the only gospel believer in my family. My mom didn't care too much about religion and never attended Catholic Mass. She even let us kids go to Sunday school at a Baptist church across town. The Baptists would send a bus into the highways and byways of Cambridge and collect us hood rats and try and plant some seed of the gospel. At Sunday school, I heard about having two birthdays or being born again for the first time, but it really didn't make any sense to me. I have an uncle, my mom's oldest brother, who is devoutly Catholic and loved us kids. I think he wanted our religious education to be a little closer to home. So he started taking us to Mass as we got a bit older, but I stopped going shortly after my confirmation at age 13. And I think I attended Mass the longest out of all my siblings. The church just didn't mean anything to me, and my home life was beginning to wear me down a bit. So I basically believed in nothing from, say, age 13 to 20. I just didn't think much about it, or I didn't think it was practical. I didn't think religions were answering the questions that they were claiming to answer. At age 19, me and my brother took an apartment together, and I started working full-time for this company I co-opted for. Thankfully, my relationship with my mom got better as I got older, and we were pretty good friends up until her death a year and a half ago. My only other religious contact during my younger years was a couple of Jehovah's Witnesses that came knocking now and again at my apartment. Apparently, I never received the memo that I was supposed to kick them to the curb, so I invited them in to see what they had that was so great. It turns out it's just more rules with no hope. I guess you could say I was searching. And suddenly at work, along comes this Christian lady, whatever that means, in this soup of a spiritual culture I lived in at the time. Joanne had a quiet testimony. She didn't participate in conversations that were unbecoming, and she politely disagreed when put on the spot with subject matter that she didn't like. We were fast friends. Sometimes I poked at her and teased her a bit, but she wasn't easily offended, and she shrugged off my foolishness. I remember quite a number of conversations between her and Charlie Mitchell, a friend of mine, out on the production floor, who was a lead hand. He was in the production office several times a day. He was argumentative and liked to debate, and he had a lot of philosophies about life. None of them are Christian. They were probably more humanistic or New Agey. Mother Nature seemed to play in a lot of what he thought. I don't remember a lot about it. I just remember some heated debates. Fast forward several months to a Monday morning when the plant manager came into our office to inform us that Charlie had had a massive heart attack and had died that weekend. The first thought that came into my mind was, if Joanne is right, then Charlie's in hell. which is a weird first impression upon hearing of a coworker's death, and especially someone I liked a lot. But I just couldn't shake it. It's not like Joanne was preaching fire and brimstone to this guy, but she was adamant that Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection meant that there was only one way to be right with God. It had me wondering if you could really know what's after this crazy life and whether there was any good answers to the big questions. As it turns out, Andy and Joanne were having a college and career age Bible study at their home and invited me out. I didn't drive at the time, so I would ride home with Joanne on study nights, and then Andy would drop me home at night. We were just doing some simple Emmaus courses, but there seemed to be satisfying answers to all of my questions. I think the book of Philippians was the first book of the Bible we studied. And at one point I asked if I could go to their church and see what all the fuss was about. Since my only experience was Catholic Mass, I wondered what church meant to the folks I was hanging around. So this guy, Andy, would drive from Kitchener to Cambridge and collect me, and then we'd trek off to Tavistock Bible Chapel. And he never made me feel like it was out of his way, even though I'm sure it tacked on an extra hour to his Sunday of driving. Incidentally, Andrew Coburn is one of the elders at Tavistock Bible Chapel now. He's the guy who officiated and married Stacy and me last year. And I know he would give God the glory, but he's one of the best people I know. And it's interesting to think about how much time has passed as I see a couple of his kids in the audience here, Jonathan and Lauren. They weren't even on the scene when this story takes place, but they're young adults now. So let me just back up to the home Bible study, because that's where I was saved. But I don't remember exactly when. In fact, I fell in so comfortably with this group of Christians that I didn't pray the sinner's prayer until the night before my baptism, about a year later. I knew I believed the gospel, but I was sitting at my kitchen table writing out my short baptism blurb, and I couldn't pinpoint my conversion. And then I thought, what if I've just been assimilated? What if I've allowed myself to be absorbed into the Christian collective? It's too easy for me to just go with the flow sometimes. And these were great folks. They were very kind to me. They had potlucks. So what if I've just fallen in line for all the benefits of being around believers? Because there are benefits. This doubt was short-lived. I considered it, and I was sure that I knew I was a sinner and that Christ died for me, and that I was trusting in him alone for eternal life. No questions asked. But I still had this idea that I needed to drive the flag into the mountaintop, so to speak, and claim this ground for the Lord. So I got down on my knees then and there and thanked God for his grace and mercy. And whatever the last months leading up to my baptism were, I'll find that out in eternity. But as from then, that moment, I was his. No ambiguity, I was a follower of Christ. And by the grace of God, I'm saved. God takes a bunch of sometimes broken people, sometimes rotten people, sometimes both, and turns them into some of the best people you could know. People like Andy, who would drive all around a city to see a young man come to know Christ. Now, because I'm the only Christian in my immediate family, I'm interestingly positioned to see what my potential fate in this world would be if I had never trusted in Christ. My brother and sister grew up with the same identical backstory as me. I could tell you so many things about my sister's life and where her choices have led her, but it can be wrapped up in the simple fact that she's been divorced 3 times, and that doesn't come close to encompassing all of her failed relationships. She seems to be doing okay now and has pulled her life together in so many ways, but she's completely lost and is unconcerned with her eternity. And she doesn't even want to talk about it. As for my brother, I had a really raw conversation on the phone with him a few months ago, and it was the first time he admitted what I've already known for a decade or more, that he's an alcoholic. He went bankrupt many years ago. His common-law marriage, or whatever you call it these days, fell apart, and now he finds himself in Pembroke, shuffling his 2 daughters back and forth between himself and their mother. He's barely hanging on, and he's 1 step from losing it all again. The point is, I know exactly what my life would look like if I was never saved. I get to see it when I see where my brother and sister are without the Lord and lost. It's humbling as I enjoy this abundant life surrounded by love and blessing, and knowing I'll never get what I deserve because Jesus Christ paid it all for me. But it's heartbreaking as I watch them spurn the thing that they need the most in this world. In that conversation, my brother chalked up the differences in our lives to luck or intelligence or some basic goodness in me, the idea that I was smarter and avoided some of the mistakes that he made, or that I didn't have some of the weaknesses to temptation that he has. I hope you don't make the same mistake here today. It would be irresponsible of me to assume that we're all Christians in this auditorium, and I want to be as specific with you as I was with my brother. Repenting of your sin and trusting Christ, what we call getting saved, is pivotal. It's the necessary starting point of any best outcome in this world. Most importantly, God commands it of you. My brother and I would talk about all the stuff that's going on in his life, if he only had more money, or his ex would just give him a break, or his health was better. It's too sad. When it comes to this life, you have to put first things first. And I'm not saying that if you get saved, all of your challenges and problems simply evaporate, and it's all sitting on sofas and eating bonbons. But truly, you can't get to any lasting joy or peace in this life without it. If he could imagine his life stretching forward from today as having a million different paths, and you do the same thing, the only worthwhile ones start with the cross and being saved. You must settle these fundamental and philosophical questions of life. So I say to you here, why not do it today while you're young? I don't like putting pressure on anyone, but being born again is a necessity. So please don't put it off. This little youth gathering could be part of your testimony, how some friend who cares for you dragged you out to this conference. Sean O'Byrne said the right thing at the right time and the gospel became real. That would be amazing. This conference might be the appointment that God has made with you. And this leads me to a few things from my past that I want to touch on for the sake of believers here today. Because although a lot more can be said about my life before I was saved, and it's tragic and it's heartbreaking, but it's now just part of my history. There was a battle for my soul, and God won. Thank God. But certainly, our past informs our future. And as Christians, there's now a battle for your life. You bring a lot of baggage with you into your new life, and I brought a lot into mine. Physical and mental, fear, low self-opinion, unworthiness. I mentioned that I could be pretty closed off to others. We're all unique in so many ways, but we're also fundamentally the same when it comes to this battle. And the battle for our lives is to make them count for something, to make them count for Christ. You see, the junior psychologist in me knows exactly why my personality is how it is, how I use humor as a defense to keep people at a comfortable distance. I know exactly why I didn't get married until so late in my life, and why there was a high chance I would never trust anyone or open myself up enough to even think of getting married. In humanistic terms, I know exactly why I'm overweight and struggle with food issues. But the game has been changed. New life has occurred, and with that comes new power. This battle for our lives has formidable enemies. The devil is one. He doesn't want to see you grow and change and serve the Lord. The world is another enemy. Christians are outliers. The world is all about everybody fitting in, and the pressure to conform can be huge. My story focuses quite a bit on our third enemy, ourselves. The Apostle Paul outlines quite well in Romans the war inside of all believers. The things I want to do, I don't do them. The things that I hate, those are the things that I end up doing. Even though salvation occurs instantly and irrevocably, unfortunately, perfection doesn't occur until heaven. The Bible is also clear that we each have unique and individual struggles. The book of Hebrews talks about weights and sins that easily beset us. What easily gets me into trouble is pretty likely different to what you're struggling with. I mentioned in my opening that there were several years of floundering and apathy. It was probably like 5 years that I didn't go to church. I got bogged down with some personal stuff. I was struggling with sin and just expecting to have more victory. I was lonely in this closed-off life, and I was struggling with letting people in. I was pretty introverted and liked to keep people at arm's length. And that's really difficult in an assembly because everyone's always up in your business. people actually want to know how you're doing. So it was just easier to stay away. What an idiot I was. If I could go back, I'd give my head a shake. That was just one of a serious battle with myself. I wish I could say he's defeated. We go back and forth quite a bit, and I feel like I have to keep knocking him down. Because regret is a really tough feeling. You sometimes wish you could go back, but you can't. I've been really chewing on this concept of time. It's been nagging at me in my mind. There's no time in heaven, at least not the way that we experience it now. when Christ returns and when it's all said and done, and there's no time, it's just eternity. Time is the most valuable thing you'll ever have on earth, and it only gets to be spent here. But it will inform your future in the form of rewards and hearing well done and pleasing the God who loved and saved you. But there's a precariousness to time too, because we don't really know how much we have to spend. But it's tough when you think you've wasted it like I have. And that's why we old people are always up in your grill. We're not trying to be creepy, but we look to you young folks and see this ocean of possibility. And sure, there is this sometimes pathetic thing we do where we vicariously impose what we wish we were on you, but that's only like 5%, maybe 10%. In reality, you're surrounded by people who want the best for you and want you to achieve your dreams and reach your potential. So don't push away if you can help it. We can try and tone it down if it gets too smothery. We really just want to know how you're doing and if there's anything we can do to help. I think as I wrote this, this is just a long-winded introduction to the concept of sanctification or personal holiness and consecrating ourselves to God. Like in the battle for your soul, when you're trying to decide if you ought to trust Christ and become one of his followers, and you know that the only good future starts with salvation, once you're saved and you enter this battle for your life, if in the same way you could imagine another million paths or possibilities stretching out before you, the only best ones are the ones that you've surrendered yourself to God's will and his ways. If we can only trust in his love and that he always knows and wants what's best for us. So we're back to this third enemy, self. We each have our own will. We get to choose what friends we hang out with. We get to choose what we spend our time on, what skills and traits we cultivate in our lives. Back in those wandering years, I had plenty of arm's length friends. They were very convenient. They didn't chase me for how I was spending my time. There was no accountability, and in some pretty basic ways, they didn't really care how I was doing. Not really. We had common interests. For me, it was World of Warcraft, specifically for a bunch of that time. Maybe I'm outing myself as a nerd here, but I've always been a gamer. When I was young, it was Dungeons and Dragons and junk food every weekend. Magic the Gathering took a lot of Friday nights and Sundays from me as well. I had to give them all up eventually. I still like them and think that there's nothing wrong with them intrinsically. I just ran out of time. I'm not bringing this up to tell you to quit your hobbies or what you consider fun. I'm convinced that God doesn't want his followers to be robots, and we all have different personalities and things we enjoy. I just became convicted when I realized that I could play a video game for 8 hours, but I was having trouble reading my Bible or praying for 15 minutes. And just to protect my fellow nerds in the audience, insert any time sink here. If it's sports, movies, fashion, fitness, TV. We're in 2015 now, so Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Netflix. The gut check is, am I using it or is it using me? Or better yet, does this investment transcend this world? There are really only two things that make it out of this world at the end of the age: the word of God, which we are told is eternal, and the eternal soul of everyone sitting here today. Are you getting to know God better through his word? And are you investing in the lives of your fellow man? That, once again, for the believer, is the concept of putting first things first. The interesting connection to this part of my story is that it comes back to my true friend Andy. During those drifting years, he would pop by, you know, to see how I was doing, because he really cared how I was doing. I finally let him in on some of what was bothering me, and as it turns out, God specializes in restoring broken things after he redeems them, and he wants to make something beautiful out of what can only be described as garbage initially. I don't want to oversimplify the situation, but we have all the resources to be overcomers in this age we live. I hope you can hear my testimony in the spirit that it's been given. It's meant to be more introspective than accusatory. It pains me sometimes when I think of where I could be after 22 years of salvation compared to where I am, but the Lord knows. And in the final analysis, there'll be portions of my life that'll be an inspiration to be followed, and portions of my lives which could be told as a cautionary tale to be avoided. I just pray that it'll count for something before time's up. Thank you.